Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Obscurities of History, The Opium Wars, How Britain Tamed the Chinese Dragon. And this is a tale really of how much Britain really loved its tea and the lengths we were prepared to get our tea. It's a tale of deception, of sly and cunning, and it's also a tale of the underdog in terms of size, coming over on top against the mighty Chinese. So to start off with, to get you a bit of background as to the start of the conflict, Britain in the late 18th century and early 19th century, so the late 1700s and early 1800s, we were starting to drink more and more tea. We loved tea. We kept on drinking it, and we was running out of tea. And there was really only one sort of huge source of tea at the time, and that was China. And so we had to basically trade with China to get this tea. And China knew this. China knew we would pretty much do anything for this tea, and China knew that, you know, they could charge what they liked and we would still pay it. And they did charge what they liked, and we did pay it. They were just taking advantage of us, really. There was like, you know, how much money will these stupid English pigs, you know, pay for our little tea leaves? And it turns out we'd pay them a lot in silver and gold. So, China would only trade through one port, and that was Canton, with foreigners. China was closed to foreigners, closed to trade with foreign nations, apart from in this one place called Canton. And every shipment of tea there had to be paid for in hard currency, so in silver. So we was stupidly paying China in silver through this one port to satisfy our tea demands. Because basically China didn't want any British products. You know, the big British exports was your textiles, obviously, at the time. China didn't want our textiles. We could try to sell them pottery and a porcelain, but of course we forget that Chinese pottery and porcelain was some of the best in the world. Earlier on, there was actually better at us than making that sort of thing, arguably. So they really had nothing that they wanted from us. So that was probably the main reason why they would only accept silver for it. And basically we was depleting all our hard currency reserves, our silver reserves, to pay for all this tea. We was running out of silver. And so we needed to find another way to pay for it. And we was trying to sell all these different things to the Chinese, and they weren't really interested. And we started to just try selling them small batches of opium in the early 1800s, sort of the turn of the century there. So little small batches of opium. Opium is like your pure form your natural form of heroin and like morphine and things like that. So basically we started supplying illegally heroin to China, obviously in this form of opium. And the Chinese, we started selling them little bits just to see, obviously, whether they would like it or not, as we had taken them, obviously, previously, our wares in the past, our textiles and our potteries that they didn't want. So we only sold them little bits just in case they didn't really like it, and we ended up selling. We noticed that they were buying more and more off us, and they were paying a higher price, and we thought, right, we've got it, we've found what China wants, and that's opium. So we kept increasing the amount of opium that we were sending to China and selling them this. And what we was making them pay for it, we was making them pay silver for it. So we was very cunning, very sly there. China would only accept silver for their tea. We would only accept silver from the Chinese to sell them our opium. And we eventually got to a point where we were selling them that much opium that we was gaining that much silver that we could pay for all our tea needs, and actually keep some silver for ourselves. So it was really, really doing the Chinese out of all of their silver, getting them addicted to opium, and we was getting a load of free tea out of it as well. So we really mastered the Chinese there at that point. At the height of it, we got 12 million Chinese peasants addicted to opium. 12 million. That was before the outbreak of the First Opium War. 12 million. That's absolutely insane. We were supplying that much that much opium to China, that it was enough to get 12 million people addicted to it and supplied with it on a regular basis. When you might ask, where were we getting all this opium? Well, we was getting it from India. We obviously owned India at the time, we conquered it, and the East India Company, that was the state-owned trading company with India, there was farming opium there, there was growing the poppies in India, and there was had these huge factories that was harvesting these poppies and processing it into opium in India. That's where we was getting it all from. So we was basically getting that for free, really, from India, because we owned it at the time. We paid for that with our trade with India. So, you know, we got the raw cotton from India, shipped it to Britain. We turned that cotton into finished textile product. We then shipped it back to India and sold it back to them. So we was making profit there. And with that profit, we could buy the opium. And with that opium, we could buy the tea. So that was there was like a trading triangle that we set up there to serve our own tea needs, so to speak. And so that's the background for the starting off of the First Opium War. So fast forward to 1839, and China is, like I say, that 12 million peasants that I quoted earlier, China's got a big drugs problem right now in 1839. And the emperor's sort of realising that they've got to do something about this. China's losing a lot of money in the silver that it's costing them to buy the opium. Opium, by the way, is still illegal in China at this point. So we were sort of like international drug smugglers. So the Chinese emperor was he realised that he had to do something about it. A huge proportion of his population's addicted to opium. It's costing China loads of money. And they're basically getting done over by these foreigners, these Westerners that have come here to buy their tea. And so what they do is they seized all the British opium in Canton and they dumped it into the sea. That made us quite angry because that cost us a lot of money. I think if I remember rightly, at the time it was £2 million worth in sterling, which obviously nowadays, £2 million to now is obviously, you have to convert that in your mind, but that's a hell of a lot of money worth of opium. They dumped it in the sea. And we were pretty mad about that, as you would expect. And China said, no more opium. Don't sell us any opium anymore. Go away. We're not going to buy your opium off you. We're not going to sell you any tea unless you pay for it with your silver that isn't from selling us opium. Come back, you know, when you want to do trade with us. And they underestimated, obviously, the might of the British Empire at that time. They really didn't think that Britain, a small country, the other side of the world, could really do anything about that. Bear in mind, at the time, China had a population over 50 times the size of Britain's population. And of course, they didn't think that we could do anything to hurt them from the other side of the world. They were very wrong. Britain, of course, at the time had become a maritime nation by this point. Well, it had always been a maritime nation, but the navy was absolutely huge at this point in the 1830s. We'd got new iron ships in. The Chinese were still using wooden ships, sailboats. They were called junks. That's not an insult, that's actually what they called them, junks. And that was their, like, navy, so to speak, their ships. They were all these, what was called Chinese junks, and they were coming up against British iron steamer ships. And you can imagine how that went. So we sent all these new ironclad steamer ships over to China, and this it was later called, we did it elsewhere as well after China because it was such a successful tactic. It was called gunboat diplomacy. And the idea was you send a load of gunboats over to somewhere, they see the power of your navy, and then they go, oh, actually, sorry, we didn't mean to threaten you. Yeah, take whatever you want. And we had a lot of skirmishes with the Chinese. We shelled a few cities and things like that from the sea with these ships that we'd sent over to China. And in 1841, we sent a task force up the Pearl River. Guess what's at the end of the Pearl River in China? Oh yeah, Canton, that place where they threw all our opium into the sea. And we came up against these wooden Chinese junks and absolutely demolished them. Yeah, and the result of that battle was only 69 soldiers were killed. Oh, sorry, that's the result of the end of the First Opium War. Only 69 soldiers were killed in battle between 1839 and 1842, and over 200,000 Chinese, oh sorry, over 20,000 Chinese were killed or wounded. 69 British soldiers killed, about 20,000 Chinese soldiers killed or wounded. There's a big difference there, obviously, and not quite what the Chinese were expecting, I hasten to add. And so we signed what was called, or we forced the Chinese to sign, after our crushing victory, the Treaty of Nanking in 1842. And that that was how we got Hong Kong, incidentally. We forced the Chinese to give Hong Kong to us and to pay us the war damages in, guess what, silver. So the Chinese were paying the war reparations to us in silver that we then could use to buy more tea off the Chinese. So result, if you ask me. So we'd beaten them militarily. We was forcing them to pay us money. We forced actually as well China to open up more ports to sell goods to Western nations. So we actually helped ourselves as well and other nations such as France and the Dutch to trade with China. Because before, obviously, like I said, we could only trade through Canton. But now they opened up 5 new ports where Westerners could trade with them, which was another big result. And bought us some friends in Europe. And then it was all happy families again. China was still addicted to opium. We still was drinking loads of tea. And we thought this was a great deal. Chinese didn't think it was a great deal. So then we have the Second Opium War in 1856. The Chinese were getting a bit too big for their boots again. They were saying, you know, we're fed up of still being addicted to opium. With that last treaty you signed with us, we didn't get anything out of it. We're still paying you money. We're giving everything to you. You know, why should we be doing this? And they seized they took some British prisoners hostage. And obviously we couldn't have that, could we? So we had this 4-year-long war with them again. We sent a load of raiding parties into different Chinese cities. We burnt the emperor's palace to the ground because he tortured some British people who'd come to negotiate the treaties with them. So we burnt his house down. We did all sorts of crazy stuff. We forced them to sign what was called the Treaty of Beijing. That ensured the dominance of the European powers over the Chinese. It really made China, you know, belong to us at that point. Not conquered in terms of it was part of the empire, but in terms of that we had ensured that there would trade with Europe and that there would be no more trouble from the Chinese to Western powers, so Britain, France, Russia at the time as well, and America was also wanting to trade with China. We basically put China back in its box, and that was 1860 that Second Opium War finished. And we got from that Treaty of Beijing in the Second Opium War, we got more territory for Hong Kong, we got more silver, we got the Chinese to give us more silver, and we legalised the opium trade again so we could continue pumping China full of opium. And that's the end of the story, really. So to summarise, we love tea, and we love tea that much that we're willing to destroy the entire Chinese peasantry with getting them addicted to opium. That's how much we love tea. And we like silver as well. We don't like giving our silver away to some Chinese people. We certainly shouldn't be underestimated, or at least in the 1830s and the mid-1800s. China didn't think we could do anything about it, and we proved them wrong. We proved that actually, yeah, we could do something about it. And obviously Hong Kong was only given back to the Chinese in 1997. So we had a long tenure over Hong Kong as a result of the Opium Wars, and they're not really on the British conscience today. They're largely forgotten. The only reason they are talked of is in relation to Hong Kong, usually when Hong Kong's brought up, you know, with all this trouble in Hong Kong, and say, oh, it was better when Britain ruled Hong Kong, etc., etc. How did we get Hong Kong? And then somebody will say, oh, yeah, it was the Opium Wars. Remember those two wars we fought in China? Oh, yeah. But in China, the Opium Wars, or at least the First Opium War, it's the start of modern Chinese history. And they teach it in the schools and things like that, and they view it as the start of really China opening up itself to the Western influence and to trade and to becoming the nation that it is today. The Opium Wars are viewed as a lot more important in China than what they are in Britain, and I can probably hazard a guess that you might not have heard of the Opium Wars until today. And if you had already heard of the Opium Wars, then you probably didn't realise all the ins and outs of what was going on, where we got all our opium from, and, you know, the fact that the wars was entirely fought off because of tea, basically. So thank you for listening. I hope you learned something today, and I'll see you in the next episode.